And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Stefan Schmidt, who is a coach, a CTO coach with Amazing CTO, and just released a new book called Amazing CTO. Today, we're going to talk about CTOs. When do you need one? What to expect from one? All the different types. Technical co-founder, fractional, all these different things. And I think Stefan would probably tell us most people pick the wrong one. And so we're going to talk about that today. Before we get started, if you also need to hire software developers to help your CTO, you can check us out at Fullscale. If you need front end, back end, mobile, QA, whatever your tech stack is, check us out at fullscale.io. That's my company. That's what I do. That's my day job. So, Stefan, welcome to the show, man.
Welcome. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, I guess I guess my first question should be, are you joining us from Germany or Deutschland?
From Germany. From the north of Germany. From the Baltic Sea. So, the beach is 10 minutes down the road.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you so much for doing this. And I guess give us like the real quick snapshot of your background and experience. You know, you spend most of your time now as a CTO coach, but have you started some other companies and been a CTO for your own companies? Give us a quick snapshot.
Quick is a little bit difficult with my, like seeing from the color of my hair. I'm not that young anymore. So, but I try, I do my best. I started as a coder as a kid, 40 years ago. I wanted to write video games as a kid, so I learned programming, and that got me into a 40 years career. I worked in several startups, founded startups, was working as a high engineering manager in startups. I was working for eBay, for an eBay subsidiary for some time as a CTO. And then in the end, my wife also started a startup, and when she sold her startup, I was the CTO there, and we moved to the beach, actually. And then I decided what to do, and that was CTO coaching.
Now, how long have you been doing the coaching?
4 to 5 years, something like that. Okay. I've been doing this before I stopped, because I did a lot of on the side founder coaching. I helped founders to start a startup, like came to me and said, Stefan, I have an idea, what should I do? Outsource, hire developer, stuff like that. So I've been coaching way before I officially became a coach.
So if somebody's listening right now and they're like, hey, I have a great idea, I want to start some kind of tech company, I don't know where to start. You know, should I hire a CTO? Should I hire a dev agency? Like, should I go find a random developer? Should I go, you know, go to college campus and recruit a developer? Like, where do they start? What do you recommend?
What I recommend is start with a PowerPoint slide deck. You know, draw up your idea as a mock-up with a UI and something like that and some key features, and go around and get feedback on that idea. You know, and see if it works, what people think of, if they would buy it. If you have a contract with you and say, yeah, I have a contract, sign here, you get the feature, you get the product in 6 months or something, or 3 months. That's how I would start things, and not start with a product per se, and not hire a developer in the beginning.
So focus on validating the idea first.
Yes. Yeah.
That's too logical of an answer.
Yeah, people want to really want to see. I mean, when I talk to founders, they really want to see their idea as code, as a program, as a website. And I can feel that because it makes it real. But you can go a long way without spending money just by drawing something in Figma or drawing something in PowerPoint, and excite people and get exciting feedback before you hire a developer. And if you hire a developer too early, then you just spend on iterating and paying the person. And it depends. If you have a lot of money on the side, that can work. If you have a lot of money, there's also a lot of money to burn. No problem there. But it's much more effective and efficient, I think, if you just go around. And then after validating this, I would create a prototype and work on an MVP. And for that, I'd hire probably someone on Upwork or someone in the beginning to just get something working to show around.
What is your opinion on if a startup should have a tech co-founder, though, right? Should somebody be on the team, actually be able to build the software versus always chasing, trying to find somebody else to build it?
If you find a good tech founder, co-founder, great. I mean, that's great. It saves money. It depends on how much money it saves. Like you say, save the salary, but you give away equity. So in the end, it might cost you some millions. I think if you have a great co-founder that who's enthusiastic about the product and who's really good, I think that's the way to go. And preferably some co-founder who has done it before. You know, otherwise, I mean, you can make everything work, but it's much easier if you have someone who did it before.
Well, I feel like the real magic comes in when you have a technical co-founder that also has and shares the product vision and the company vision for whatever you're trying to build, right? Versus yeah. somebody who's like a hired gun who comes in, you're like, tell me what to do, go build this thing. But they don't really have the same vision for it as you. Yeah. I feel like that's where the most successful companies always have somebody who really has that product vision that's part of the founding team that can build the solution.
But I feel like the team has hung around together for some time before they found a startup. You know, so they find a teammate, they talk about this idea and another idea, and then they start a company. You know, it's not like, okay, I start a company and then I look for a co-founder. I feel like the more successful way is first finding a co-founder and agreeing of what you said, on agreeing on the product vision and being excited together. And then as an excited team, start the startup. I think it's difficult to find a co-founder somewhere in a meetup or wherever you're looking for.
And you don't know anything about them.
Yeah. And then find excitement level.
And it's kind of a scary decision, because I always joke that it's easier to get a divorce from like your wife or husband or whatever than it is to get rid of a co-founder.
Yeah.
Like once you start a company with somebody, yeah. like it's nearly impossible to get rid of them.
Yes. And if you do that, if you have founded company already, tie the equity to some milestones, because a lot of developers don't deliver. So don't make the mistake have some milestones where the equity increases. For example, if the MVP is done and the PMF is done and stuff like this.
So you mentioned earlier, you know, you first need to validate the idea, which I totally agree with. And a lot of people seem to skip that stage. They want to go straight to just building. But if you don't have a technical co-founder, what do you recommend somebody do as the first stage? You said like find some kind of agency or just some kind of developer to just build some kind of prototype. What do you recommend?
I personally would start with an agency, because it's very difficult to hire a developer. So when I was still looking out for CTO jobs like 15 years ago, and I looked into a lot of startups and I looked at the developers, and too often there was not the best developers there, or not the right mix of developers, let's put it that way. And if you're a non-technical founder, it's very difficult to find a good developer as a co-founder. It's very difficult to evaluate them. So you might end up with someone who's not the best. And you also need some time to find that person, perhaps, or find a developer if you don't go to Upwork. I think outsourcing something in the beginning to get you started, I think is a good idea.
Well, I also feel like it takes a different kind of developer to build like a MVP of something than somebody who works at some big company and they're like, they just do Jira tickets all day of some little improvement or some little bug fix or whatever. Like when you go to me at Greenfield and like, hey, we can build whatever we want. We're going to go build this brand new thing. Go. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of developers I don't think have ever done that before or don't have a lot of experience doing that. And I think it takes the right kind of developer. Would you agree?
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely. And there is this model, I think it's by Simon Wardley. It's the pioneer settler town planner model. And it says that there are three kinds of people, the pioneers, the settlers, and the town planners. And the pioneers are walking around, see the landscape and say, oh, this is a nice lake, let's settle there. And they build a house. And then other settlers, other pioneers come there and build their houses. And at a certain size, it attracts settlers. And the settlers are growing the settlement. And then after some time, when it's grown enough, there are the town planners who make sure that all the streets are straight and all the houses have electricity and stuff like that. So there are different people, the pioneers and the settlers. The pioneers find stuff, the settlers make it big, and the town planners make it right. And you need to find pioneers in the beginning. If you want to make it very, sometimes people want to de-risk everything and reduce risk as much as possible and hire town planners. And that's not, town planners are not going out into the wilderness, finding a place to build the cabin.
They're scared away by that. They're totally scared, right? So yeah. when you talk to other developers or CTOs that you talk to now, how do you figure out if they're a pioneer though? Are there certain questions that you ask them, a certain mindset you're looking for? Like, how do you tease that out?
I start with what you said about scary. Like, my style of interviewing is I try to give people different options that they can choose off, and all options sound good. So I don't want to have leading questions. I try to ask questions with options that are all good, and then I see what people choose. So like one point might be, do you think it's good to make an existing product better and for because there is already something and the customer has already value, or do you think we should build something new because we can do something what we learned of and it's exciting and stuff like that? So asking questions around what they do to find out how they feel about stuff, and then what options they choose, and finding out if they are pioneers. And it's also something that's tied into with it's good if everyone has this, but especially pioneers, which is taking responsibility and ownership of things. Like what you mentioned, the ticket guys in the big enterprises, they might not take ownership of what they're building. But if you're in a startup and if you want to hire a pioneer, you really need to look into someone who's owning stuff, who makes it his or her own or their own.
I couldn't agree with that more, and I think that's one of the most frustrating things I have when I work with developers is they just kind of sit around waiting to be told what to do versus like taking ownership of this thing, and they're like, no, this is what we're going to do. Like, we're going to build a settlement here. We're going to build a bridge over that river. We're going to go find food over here. Like, I'm making all the decisions. Yeah. We're going to figure out how to survive, and we're going to do this thing, right? Versus just sitting around waiting for the juror ticket.
Yes, yes. And you need to look for these people in the beginning. And then when you grow, I mean, in the beginning, you can't make a lot of mistakes. I have a very simple model, which starts with, you first build a prototype, which could be the Figma mockup I mentioned. Then you have an MVP, which is the first thing you want to go to the market and show customers and get payment for. And then you're working towards PMF for product market fit. And after that, if you made it that far, a lot of companies struggle with product market fit, then there is traction. And I think in the beginning of prototype and MVP, I don't think you need to CTO. You can't screw up. There is today programming environments and everything is so easy. I think in the beginning, you can't screw up technologically wise. Then around product market fit, and then if you get traction and into scaling, then it becomes very important that you have a CTO who can scale the team, who hires people, who can scale the architecture and do all this stuff.
So when you're in this earlier stage of prototype, MVP, starting to work on product market fit, then who runs the technology? Who leads the team? Figure out, are we building the right product, the right architecture? Who leads that?
sorry, Matt. I don't think until like if you're PMF until PMF or through MVP, it could be two developers. I don't think you really need a lead there. I'd hire two people because like one gets ill or some other delays, then you're delayed. But otherwise, I think you can get very far with two people, to an MVP, and then you need to hire more people towards PMF, and then that would be the point when I'd hire or designate a lead, or designate a tech lead, or designate a CTO.
So, but up to that point, you're then relying on one of the other founders to really drive the product vision and kind of run the team on a day-to-day?
I think the product vision can be run by the CEO. So I'm most likely a Steve Jobs guy. I believe in a founder, a CEO founder who has a vision, who does not run the tech department or the product department. I mean, nothing against a co-founder, a product visionary co-founder who drives product. Nothing against that, but I think the CEO can do that in a Steve Jobs way. And then you just need two developers that take ownership. And that gets you quite far. I think it struggles. They struggle when you need to start to hire more developers. Like if you want to go from three, two, three, four, and that would be the point where I think you need someone to hire more developers and organize things, organize the team. And at that point, I designated the CTO or find a CTO solution.
So for companies that have, say, less than five developers, they're in this early stage, what are the biggest mistakes that people have that somebody like you comes in, you have to help coach them and help figure out how to solve these problems?
I mostly start at five developers because I'm mostly... Okay. I tell people, I don't think you have enough problems to pay me for if you have three developers or something. You know, that's not, I don't think you have problems. But around the time, like five people, mistakes I see from the founder perspective is they make the CTO their first dev hire. So they hire a dev and that becomes the CTO and they want to pull in a developer with the carrot of you'll be the CTO. I see that too often. And that's a mistake because the person with a high probability is not the right guy or not the right person, you know.
So why do you say that? Is it because they can't elevate themselves to be a manager and a leader later? Like they're just an individual contributor?
Yes, because you by hiring, they... Founders look too much into coding and getting things done, getting stuff done at that point. But the CTO role is so fast changing. Like you're coding, then you're reviewing a lot, then you give guidelines, then you hire team leads, then you manage through people, then you're responsible for the culture, for the guidelines, for the checklists. You're responsible for strategy. This role changes so much in the first 2 or 3 years that you need to have someone that can adapt to the role over the years. And if you just hire a developer to focus on getting some code done, there's a low probability that the person can do it if you do not check it out during hiring.
Well, I do want to take a minute to remind everybody that today's episode is brought to you by FullScale. If you need to hire software developers, check us out. We have over 300 employees in the Philippines. We charge about 60, 70% less than it usually takes to hire somebody. Check us out at fullscale.io. Well, so let me ask you this. So when people are having this struggle, I posted on LinkedIn about a CTO usually either stands for Chief Trello Officer, Chief TypeScript Officer, Chief Troubleshooting Officer, right? Because in the early stage, when you have like you're talking about less than five employees, maybe less than 10 even developers, a lot of CTOs have to be very hands-on, right? It's yes. Less of a strategy and a leadership job. But being the CTO of like a large corporation is a dramatically different job. Like it's totally different job.
Yeah.
What is, for the people out there though, aren't most CTOs in smaller companies? Like to me, I seem like in my head, like, feels like 80% of the CTOs are in smaller companies with 10 employees or less, 10 developers or less, right? Compared to the Fortune 500s where there literally would be 500 of them probably.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree.
But and so the job is very different. So when you come in to help these CTOs, what are usually the problems you're trying to help them with? Is it that they were an individual contributor that was given the job title, but they aren't very good at the leadership and management skills? Like, what are the things that you usually get brought in to help?
So to get some perspective, I usually get my clients are between 5 and 80, 90 developers. So that's where my clients are. I don't have experience with 500 developers. So
yeah.
I can't tell you anything about that. It's really the range and the fast growing startups in that range. And the biggest challenges my clients have is first delegation. That's probably the biggest thing because like they know what they do and they do some things when there are 5 developers. And then they try to do the same things when there are 10 developers, but it's not scaling. Like the stuff they are doing and how they do things, it's not scaling. They need to start delegating with 5 developers, really make people responsible, give tasks to people, give projects to people, push hiring, push decisions, stuff like this. If you don't do this, then most of my clients come to a point at 10 people, 15 people, where it's just no longer working because they haven't started delegating before. And also because they have not identified and nurtured people they could delegate to. When they come to a point where they urgently need to delegate stuff, they have no one to delegate to. So you need to work early on, find people you plan to delegate stuff to, because at one point when you need to delegate, you need to have these people. So I think that's the biggest problem they have. And that ties into they usually don't have team leads early enough, so they hire team leads too late, and that's also something that's happening.
Well, I guess what I'm assuming is most time when you have 5 to 10 people, it could be one team. It's like we have one dev team, yeah, and we have one dev leader, and they might be the CTO you're describing. But then at some point in time, the team gets too big, right? You hire like person number 9, and you're like, yeah, you know what? We really need 2 teams, but we don't have 2 leaders, right? So yes. I can't delegate to somebody else to really go lead that team. I'm stretched too thin. I can't keep up with helping 9 people build things. Like, is that usually the issue? It's like you get to like you just keep adding developers, and eventually it breaks.
Yes, yes. And then you go to the CEO and tell the CEO, I urgently need team leads or tech leads or whatever you want to call them. And then the CEO says, yeah, okay, how much is this? And then you say, I don't know, 500,000. And depends on where you live. But you say 500,000. And then the CEO says, okay, how much more features do we get out with this 500,000? And then you say, yeah, well, it's just helping me. It's not, they are not coders. It's just to get, to scale me. And then this is a very difficult sell, a very hard sell to get this money without getting obvious benefits out of it. You know, if you go to a CEO and say, I need another developer. CEO says, okay, another developer, more features, or you know, shorter development time. They can see this, but if you go to the CEO, you want team leads, that's difficult, and because in a lot of organizations, the tech department already is the biggest department. You know, you might
it's
have
very
10
expensive
developers. Yeah, and you might have 10 developers. Marketing has 2 people, perhaps, and you have 10 developers already because you often scale early. No one else except you has that problem. So a lot of these people problems, hiring processes, one-on-ones, but also team leads, a lot of other stuff, firing people. So that most often happens first in development.
So you don't think team leads can be contributors as well? Think they're managers only?
No, they can be. Up to a certain point, I'd start 50-50.
Okay.
And then if I delegate more responsibility for security or for some other topics to them, that will shrink. But yeah, I'd start with 50-50.
So I'm also curious, how do you feel like the role of the CTO changes from 5 to 10 to 20? you know, developers, like, when is the CTO able to be hands-on and be a contributor versus they can't be a contributor at all?
I think it's earlier than most people suspect. It's difficult if you fall under a certain percentage of your time developing, you just don't have all the code in your mind, and a lot of features go left and right, and you're not looking into all the features anymore because you spend only 20% of time developing or something, and then you don't have the whole model in your mind if you develop something. And that happened to me at a very large German real estate company website, the biggest real estate marketplace in Germany. I was an engineering manager, and the team was under pressure. And I said, how can I help? And the project lead thought, oh, Stefan, let's give him some stuff where he can't screw up. And he gave me some things. You know, do some JavaScript here. That's not, you know. So because I wanted to help, because people were working at night, and yeah. But the point was, in the end, I brought down the website. You know, and that was a multi-million-dollar website with a lot of millions of users. And I brought it down because I didn't know about some intricacies of the framework. So my JavaScript code was wrong, and that really pulled down the whole website. So at some point, I think you don't have the model of the application in your mind anymore as a manager. So you should reflect if you're really a good developer and if you're contributing or if you're hindering the effort. And when you grow, I think the biggest thing CTOs need to do, but often don't, is think about strategy and vision and guidance and giving leadership. They are then too much in the trenches and not leading enough.
One thing I've always heard many times people preach is, if you're going to be an engineering leader, be it a CTO, director, VP, any of the job titles, you don't want to be the blocker, right? You don't want to be like the person that is deploying production code that's really the blocker on getting anything accomplished, right? I think that's got to be one of the primary things.
Yes. I've seen this several times in the past, CTOs who want to do every code review, for example, and it blocks, and they have a long queue, and you know, and everyone is unhappy because but they can't give the responsibility to someone else to do the final review. So this is a big blocker I've seen.
But I do think one of the biggest values that a CTO can provide and other engineering leaders can provide is doing prototypes of things. It's like, you know, they can be on their own little world where they're not interfering with anybody else. They're like, go prototype how we would do this weird thing with AI, build a little MVP, just a functional kind of prototype. Do you feel like that's one of the best uses of their time?
Yes. I have two clients which are excellent CTOs, and both of them do this. And a good friend of mine, who's also one of the best, I think, in Germany, and he has been doing this in the past too. So yeah, I totally agree.
I feel like that's one of the superpowers of a really good CTO is they can prototype different things. Like, they could be that expert pioneer. You know, earlier in our conversation, we're talking about pioneers. If they're a really, really good pioneer, and they're like, hey, I can go figure out this weird thing, and it could be building a new product feature. It could be like, hey, I need to figure out how we're going to use Azure or AWS or whatever the thing is, right? Like, I'm going to go solve the really hard problem. I'm not going to solve the whole thing. I'm just going to do like the first 80% of it, and then I'll hand it to the team. I feel like that's where they can be the most valuable.
Yes, and not interfere with feature development, yes.
And honestly, that's the part of the work that I've always enjoyed the most when I've worked as a CTO was, how do I be this pioneer? How do I go innovate and go build this thing? But then I don't want to cross the T's and dot the I's and build all the final frameworks and do all the testing. Like, that's boring to me. So I give that to somebody else, and then I'll go build another thing.
Yeah. And I tell clients there are three stages when they join me, when they become my clients. Too early, at the right point, too late. Too early is when some people want to pre-build their skills for some future, which usually does not work because we can't look into the future. Otherwise, I would play the lottery. I don't play the lottery because I can't look into the future, and they can't neither. So preparing skills, like some obvious stuff, yes, but that's too early. And then some come too late, and that's usually before they drop the job of CTO, because it's a really stressful job. And too often they no longer have joy in their work, and that sometimes happens because they delegate everything away that makes them happy, you know, and only the things that make them unhappy that stays with them, for various reasons, because they think they need to do it, or they don't want to give the bad job to other people, or so they end up with all the stuff that doesn't make them happy. And what you just described with this doing this prototyping, I think, because why did they come into this programming industry? Why did they join? Why did they become a coder? Because they enjoyed creating stuff out of nothing. You know, there's nothingness, and then you do something, and then there is something. I think that's what the creativity of this is, what brings people into coding, and that's what brought the CTOs into coding. And then they give it away. So I think what you said is a great way to keep the joy of the job.
So this is so true. Like, one of the companies I work with right now, I basically work as the fractional CTO for. I don't enjoy it at all. And you know why? I don't do anything. I'm basically like a glorified project manager. I have delegated everything there is away. I don't do anything that's fun or creative in regards to this thing. I just feel like some project manager, and I hate every minute of it. And you just exactly described it. Like, I delegated away all the parts of the job that I enjoy.
Yes.
And now all I have left is the part that I have no interest in.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And this happens so often.
So you might have just solved my problem. Thank you so much. I need to delegate away the last thing and be done with all of it.
See, people don't need coaching. They need a podcast.
Yeah. Well, tell us more about your book. So your company is called Amazing CTO. You do CTO coaching and all this stuff. You have a newsletter called Amazing CTO as well. I subscribe to. People can check it out. But tell us about your book. You know, I think there are a lot of books out there about engineering leadership. Probably not as many books about CTOs, actually. But tell us more about your book and what's unique about it.
What's unique about my book is that there is nothing about team topologies or processes or architecture or scaling in it. It's mostly not about technology. There are so many great books, especially everything Will Larson wrote. That's so excellent. So I don't want to contribute to that. I can't. But I found that a lot of small stuff is missing in these books, and a lot of engineering managers struggle with a lot of small things. And one thing is like the delegation. So they're in the topic. One topic is how to delegate things properly. Another topic is how to set up people for success instead of setting them up for failure. I too often see people setting up their employees for failure, and then they complain that the employee failed. Yeah, well, you set them up that way. So it's more about these things. And it's 140 rules. So I structured the book in rules.
Oh, wow.
140 small rules, which ruthlessly delegating or doing one-on-ones and stuff like this, and how you do these things. So that's what the book is about.
Well, that is super awesome. And so obviously these insights and these rules are based on your many years of experience of this coaching. So I'm definitely going to check out the book, and I'm sure I'll learn a few things from it, especially undelegating the things I enjoyed doing.
Yes, that's a point in the book too.
Yeah. What else should people know about you and the services that you provide?
So I'm a CTO coach, and coaching is 1 hour a week helping with all the things people, CTOs, struggle with. Some of my clients are there for 3 months until we solve some problems, like preparing for a technical due diligence and things. Some of them have stayed for me for years. And recently I saw a YouTube video at Mercedes-Benz, and they produce a truck which is called Unimog. And the manager was asked, how long do they work? How long is a Unimog working? And the manager said, well, we don't know. We only built them for 70 years now. So it's a little bit, for some of my clients, it's like that. I don't know how long the relationship is, because some of them are for several years since the beginning. So it's very different. I sometimes do fractional CTO if a friend of a friend asks me kindly to, or there's a big crisis I can help. But mostly I'm coaching.
Well, and I think everybody needs a coach, because if you're a CTO, unless you know a lot of other CTOs, you may not know people that you can talk to or relate to about whatever your challenges are, right? So I feel like we all need a safe space where we can talk to somebody and complain about, all right, this stupid employee of mine did this dumb thing again. I don't know what to do about it. My boss is a jackwagon. Like, you know, you need somebody to talk to, and I'm sure you are play psychiatrist many days.
Yes, that's a lot of like. If I could choose another education that would be helpful, it would be psychiatrist. Because a lot of people they complain and they can vent off. You can talk to your boss about some things. You can talk about your direct reports about some things. You can talk to your peers about some things. But then there is stuff left that you carry around.
Yeah.
And that stuff that's left, you can just drop off in a session with me. And I listen. I've been there, seen that, bought the T-shirt. So I understand.
And from your perspective, it's a lot of the same patterns, right? Like if you talk to 50 different people, it's the same certain number of problems, probably.
One reason, there's not some reasons I became a CTO coach. One of the reasons was because there was none when I was CTO, and there were very difficult situations, website down during the night, founders shouting at me. So very difficult situation where I would really have loved to coach, and I also loved coaching my direct reports. So there were some different reasons. But one reason to become a CTO coach was I wanted to see more problems, because there is only some frequency of problems you can see if you're a CTO. You know, there's only some speed. I thought becoming CTO coach, I see more problems, and I was really interested in the how business, B2B, B2C, fintech, health tech, influence the problems the CTO has. Like that was where I was interested in. But I ended up with what I'm saying. Everyone has the same problems, just different.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate having you on the show today. Again, if people want to learn more about what you do, they can check you out at amazingcto.com, right? And I'm sure you can find your book everywhere, sign up for your newsletter. Again, this was Stefan Schmidt. I really appreciate having you on the show today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Take care.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.